You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 125 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted this morning to be joined by Becky. Welcome, Becky.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much for coming on. And we're here to talk about your son, who's nearly three, am I right?
Yeah, he's three in June.
Oh, nice. Well, happy birthday to him for June. A little bit before this comes out.
Yeah.
But yes, so we're here to talk about his Hirschsprungs story, obviously. So I'll hand over to you if you could let us know sort of from the very beginning.
Yeah, so from the beginning, so Luca was born by planned cesarean section because he was breech. He had his first bottle of milk in recovery, and then he refused to feed again. So we wasn't sure what was going on. He was taken to NICU because he had a low temperature as well. He was put on some antibiotics because I had something called strep B that I was positive for. So they put him on antibiotics as a precaution. So he was fed by NG tube milk, but he was just constantly sicking it up. And then they found out my daughter had a milk allergy, so then they put him on allergy milk. Which I did think it was impossible for to have an allergy to milk at 24 hours old, but they said it was possible. So we went with that. He was still sicking it up. He still refused to feed. He wouldn't open his mouth for a dummy. He wouldn't open his mouth for a bottle of milk. So we were just getting more and more concerned. He did pass meconium, which I know is a big thing. Mm-hmm. And he was having the odd poo on his chart, so he was having the odd one, but I know later on they said it's probably just been like pushed out. It wasn't really an actual poo. So it got to day eight of him being in neonatal that they was like, okay, we really need to figure out what's going on. Sent us for an x-ray on his tummy and noticed something wasn't right. So they sent us to our local, our nearest children's hospital, because we wasn't in a children's hospital, we were just in our local hospital. So they sent us, they called the ambulance, sent us to our local surgical unit at Sheffield Children's Hospital, which were great. They did a contrast scan for his NG to see what was going on with his tummy. They actually thought, then they said he'd got malrotation in the bowel, so it was all twisted. So then they prepped us for surgery for that. So we obviously, everything was prepared for that. And it was in the middle of the night. I remember it being late when he went down, probably like 10:30. And then about 2:00 in the morning, we got a call to say, surgeon wants to speak to you. So then he said it wasn't malrotation. His bowel was that blocked. It pushed all everything to the side to make it look like his bowel was twisted, but it wasn't malrotation. We're not sure what it is, but he was actually a specialist in Hirschsprungs, which I just find really, really odd that he was the surgeon on call that night and he was a specialist in Hirschsprungs. He said, I think he's got Hirschsprungs disease, but because we need to take a biopsy, he needs to go straight to the lab. It's 2:00 in the morning. We can't do that right now. So I put a stoma in, because we can't have it blocked up again until we know there's a cause. And this was literally 2:00 in the morning. I think, am I being woken up? Am I in a nightmare? What is happening? Because what is happening? Luke was still in theatre at this time. I think he was just in recovery. I thought, like, this isn't real. Like, you sign all the forms for the surgery, you see all the risks and all the, like, what could happen. You don't actually think it's going to happen, and this actually happened. So we came up, okay, he's back, that's fine, we'll deal with the stoma, what is wrong with him? And then he got a an infection. He got cellulitis after his operation, so he was quite poorly with that as well. And then he was on, what was it, TPN? Is that when I think it, they feed, it was had like a white, like a line in him, and that was feeding him. That was for probably a good few days, because we were told not to touch him, just so his body could recover. So he's literally laid in a bed for 3 days. The nurses did whatever they did, and then they eventually gave us him to hold, and they positioned him on us. And it was, well, we were so cautious because he was just so fragile. He just had the surgery. We didn't want to do anything that might knock anything or anything like that. And this was also the point that his sister came to meet him, because we'd not actually introduced him yet, because I had the old vision I wanted him to meet at home. At this point, this wasn't going to happen. So I remember she came, and they were great with her. Like, it was, she just kind of waved to him. She was only like 3 at the time. But then I think it was about 5 days later, they tried him with a bottle of milk, and we were like, there's no way he's going to take that. There's no way. And I think they started with like a syringe, actually. I think it was literally like 5 mils of milk. And he had it. It was like, ooh, okay. And then they built it up. And then he had a bottle of milk, was like, whoa. And then Doc was like, yeah, he was probably feeling that poorly. He didn't want to actually drink some milk. I thought obviously I didn't know, so I just felt so bad for him that he was just born and he felt that poorly. He couldn't even drink milk. Then he started having a dummy. So all the normal stuff, we would have a dummy then, which was great. So it took us, I think we was in Sheffield Children's for about 2.5 weeks with him, understanding how to look after the stoma, understanding like what we're gonna have to do. And in between that time, they did the biopsy to confirm he'd got Hirschsprung's, which was obviously, in one way, we was really happy to get a diagnosis, and we could kind of work forward with that. Also, didn't know anybody that had got Hirschsprung's, so it was kind of unknown, like, what is this? Everybody kept saying, well, what is it? I'm like, I don't actually know. Like, I've never known anybody that's had it. So yeah, it was kind of just like the unknown. But you know what? He's done so well. But the issue we had with his stoma was he had such high output. Every time he was sick, we would be in hospital on fluids. And it was just relentless, because we had a winter, and I think we spent the first third, like, out of the whole year, first year of his life, a third of that was spent in hospital, because mainly going on for fluids. And he can never get a cannula in him, because he's got no veins possible. Like, there was no vein on him that you could get a cannula in. So he used to have to go in his head. And it was just awful to see. Like, it looked worse than it was. I get that. He's like a little baby. You don't want to see a cannula coming out of his head. So I remember after his pull through, which he had at 6 months old, that was a very, very long day. And also, it was on the 27th of December, which. So Boxing Day night, I was taking my daughter to my parents, saying, can you have her? Because we've got to be at the hospital for like 7, half 7. But I was like, I just want the surgery. Like, we'll come on this day. That's fine. And I remember saying, you'll be here all day. That's fine. We'll wait all day. And I remember he went down about 9, half 9. By 5:30, he still wasn't back. And we was like, okay, where is he? My husband had to go back and get our little girl, because also we wanted to keep things consistent for her at home. She'd already had one night away from us. The plan was he'd be there for when he came out of theatre, and then he'd go back and get our daughter, and she'd have a night at home with him. And I think I got him from theatre. I think they rung me in to recovery at like 7, half 7. It was so long, that operation. So the surgeon rung me and said, I'm sorry, I can't wait to talk to you. I just need to ring you because I need to go home. I'm back in, and that's absolutely fine. They said he'd got that much like scar tissue to work through. They spent majority of time working through the scar tissue, because all his bowel was completely stuck together. And they had to give him so much fluid while they was operating on him, He's like, he's gonna look really swollen. I was like, okay. And wow, he looked, I didn't recognize him when I came out. I was like, is that him? And the only reason why I knew it was him because he's got the same dummy in. I was like, are you sure? Like, he's the only child left in theatre. I was like, okay, it must be him, but he really doesn't look like him. And it was really like, took me back. I was the only person that had seen him like that. I was like, are you sure? So yeah, he came out of theatre like that. He was on high dependency because he was 6 months old and he'd got an epidural in. This point, they said they'd taken about 50 centimetres of his bowel, which then said he'd got a long segment. But at the time, we didn't know what he'd got. They actually thought he was going to have short segment, but it was longer and he actually took more than they thought. But yeah, he said it was really complex operation. I was like, okay, that's fine. And then we was in for a while. I think we was in for about 11 or 12 days after his operation, because he'd get better and then we'd get the green fluid up from his NG. You know, we have to aspirate and it's all green, so we'd have to stop feeding again or have to go back. And then his cannula came out, so then we'd have to, and then he'd be dehydrated because he's not any fluid because he's, we couldn't give him milk. So it was just constant cycle. But yeah, I think we came out at the start of January. So we was in there a while, but as long as he got better, we didn't mind being in. I celebrated New Year's Eve with the nurses on shift. It was very quiet for them, but yeah, we had, I remember he was up all night that night. So we saw the New Year's in together. And then that was the January, and then it was the April that he had a stoma reversed. He was 9 months old. But during that period, he'd had a couple of admissions as well, just for dehydration. And I think it got to the point where the surgeon was like, I need to get you an emergency appointment to get this reversed, because he'd been put on loperamide at this time as well to try and thicken his stool. We also couldn't get a bag on him because his stoma was right next to his belly button, and because it was so high, it was just like water, a bag wouldn't stick on his tummy. So I used to have to put like paste and powder around his stoma and a nappy across him, which it would work because he wasn't moving. If he was walking, I don't think that would have worked, because he didn't really move anywhere, and he was a really chunky baby as well. Like, he didn't move. Like, I remember the nurse we used to see, because I used to have to go between when we got discharged from birth and the pull through. I used to go every week for a washout, and she's like, "This is the biggest Hirschsprung's baby I've ever seen." Like, he was huge; he wouldn't even fit on the scales. So he couldn't move because he was so big. But obviously, that's really good, because she was preparing me to have to give him like some supplements to help him like gain weight and stuff. She's like, "There's no danger there; he's big enough." So, yeah, we couldn't get a bag on him, and his skin was also sore around it. So the surgeon was like, let's just get you in for a reversal as soon as possible. And ever since then, he's done really well. We've had one admission for dehydration, and he got neurovirus, which completely wiped him out. Because he's still got a really high output, and he's on loperamide medication still. He has... it twice a day. So he's very different to a lot of Hirschsprung's kids I know have like medication to help them go to the toilet. He needs it to stop him going so much. But ever since that reversal, he's only had one case of dehydration, which is amazing for us. I was able to go back to work, because before I couldn't have gone. I mean, he was only a baby anyway, but the thought of how was I ever going to go back to work? We were in hospital so much. But yeah, I'm back. He's at nursery. He started back at nursery 6 weeks after his reversal, which was great. Which, you know, when he was born, I was like, is he ever going to be able to go to nursery? Am I ever going to go back to work? But yeah, it was just, since then, that was our turning point, I think, the reversal, where I felt like things really improved for us. But I think that was just down to the high output and always being in hospital.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station. station that makes you feel good.
Most definitely. I think that's a concern for everybody when you hear a condition that, like you said, you've never heard before. Nobody's ever heard of it before. Most people you talk to wouldn't have a clue even what part of the body Hirschsprung's would affect. And then there's the concern, you know, is he going to thrive like everybody else? Is he going to, you know, is he going to be able to go to nursery, go to school? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, this, that, the other? And obviously, yes, everybody's journey is different. But there are so many circumstances and so many people I've interviewed and who have Hirschsprung's, and so many people I've interviewed whose children have Hirschsprung's, who are thriving, who are doing really well, where it, yes, there are challenges, of course, like with any condition,
yeah,
but people are still able to, you know, live very, you know, comfortable lives and sort of beyond, and go and achieve, you know, really great things, whether that be, you know, people who are in acting or sport or whatever. So I mean, there is no reason in a lot of cases why Hirschsprung should stop you from doing, you know, whatever you want to do. But if I take back just a bit to that initial diagnosis, and they say the word Hirschsprung's. Sometimes I know there are some hospitals that have said, oh, don't Google it. Did they tell you not to or not?
So I think because I was in accommodation there at the hospital, so I was there all the time. And I remember one time we'd had a bit of a setback. He started feeding, then aspirating greens, so we had to stop. And I joined a Facebook group about Hirschsprung's. And I was telling the doctor about it. He's like, no, don't go on that. I'm like, why? Like, at least these people know. And he's like, no, delete it. I was like, okay, well, I didn't delete it.
No, of course, nobody does. Everyone goes on it because you want to know more.
That's it. I mean, if knowing what I know now, I wish I'd taken it with... People usually post their worst days on there. And I think I was just seeing a news feed of everybody's worst day, and I thought that was going to be my entire life. I am still a member. I'll be honest, I don't follow it anymore, because for me, it just helps me. Because every time I went on my socials, I'd just see someone having a really bad day, which I really emphasise. But I really felt like it brings me back to, like, I don't want that. Like, I'm trying to escape. Like, what's going on? Like, I don't want to see that. But then we don't post. Someone might be having one bad day of the year. We don't post that all the other days. And I think I really didn't get that until now.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think that's the social media thing just in general. You know, yeah, everything on social media is either the best thing ever or the worst thing ever. Nobody really posts, oh, today I just had a normal day and today I just did everything I normally do, you know, because it's not going to get the, you know, potentially get people to follow or like or whatever. And it's the same thing with Facebook groups. I see them obviously doing what I do. I'm part of quite a lot of them. And I see, yeah, various bits where some people post, you know, everything's great and everything's, you know, going really well and we've done this, but a lot of it is, you know, I've got this problem or that problem. And then I can see how when you come into having a new condition and seeing all of those things, you think, well, all of these things are going to happen, rather than just, well, actually everybody's completely different. And it's, I mean, even different to the type of Hirschsprung's people have, whether it's short or long or whatever it might be. But yeah, I think there is definitely a place for the groups, and I think there's definitely some really good things on there. But it's like social media in general, there's a lot of really good stuff, but it takes quite a long time to find, because you have to sift through all the other stuff first, I guess.
No, that's it. And I mean, nobody would ever go on, I'm having a really good day today. But maybe we need some more of that, so people know that it's normal.
Yeah, I think doing the occasional story and post and just going, yeah, everything's going quite well today would actually be quite refreshing.
Yeah, it really would. And seeing that, if you just joined that group, would really help someone understand that you will have good days. Some will be good, some will be bad.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned as well at the beginning about strep B.
Yeah.
I'm not quite. What is strep B?
Basically, it's something that I can have when you're pregnant.
Okay.
But it can, if it's not detected or treated, it can cause abnormalities in with babies. So they didn't know if that's why Luca was poorly when he was born. If it's not treated, it can be really serious. I know my friend's child, it wasn't treated with her son because it's not routinely tested on the NHS. Mine did come up within one of my tests. I don't know which one. I don't know why it came up, but they did find it. But yeah, I think he's got cerebral palsy from it. Like, it's really serious. So that's why they put him on antibiotics just to see in case it was that. But in the end, it wasn't that.
That's good. That's good. I mean,
Yeah.
it's one of those things, I guess, if it can be quite serious, probably it should be tested a little bit more, I
Yeah,
guess.
I mean that, I think there's a lot of campaigns going around to get it tested, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't, I've heard of it, but I wasn't really aware as to what it was or what it potentially may cause. So, but thank you so much for explaining that, because yeah, I had no idea.
It can come and go in pregnancy as well. So if you test for it positive at like 20 weeks pregnant, by 36 weeks it could have gone. See, there's no way of it kind of comes and goes. But I think if they detect it at all while you're pregnant, they just assume you're still testing positive for it, so they treat you for it.
Yeah, best to be safe, I guess, in that
Yeah.
circumstance.
Yeah.
And then on the topic as well of, so again, I talked to a lot of parents who obviously with Hirschsprung's, surgery tends to happen, very early after birth, within, a few weeks or months or whatever. And obviously you have to sign the forms, as you said.
Yeah.
Is that moment there where they say, right, we need to do surgery and please sign this form and whatever. I get so many parents who say everything's just a complete blur at that stage and you don't necessarily take all of it in. Did you manage to take most of it all in, or was it a bit more of a blur?
I think it was okay, but I mean, while I was in surgery, I was researching my rotation because that's what, because he was quite convinced he'd got this my rotation. I remember them saying about the risks and stuff, but and my husband was there a lot, so he was kind of doing, he signed all the forms, and he would then say, like, just we'd chat about it after just to make sure that we were clear with what's been said. But to be fair, the surgeons were very clear, like, if, oh, I'd ask the nurse if I wasn't sure. They'd just go over it with me. They were very good like that. Like, a nurse would probably be with us while they were signing, so she could be with us and just answer any questions as well. But I mean, it is a blur. I was like 8 days postpartum, having and not really been home properly since having him. So yeah, I suppose you are a bit all over the place.
That's what I kind of thought. I can't imagine how people are able to think really clearly at that stage and sort of take everything in, because I guess with Hirschsprung's as well, there's no warning signs pre-birth,
No, yeah.
so everything kind of hits you at once, and you have this condition that nobody's ever heard of, and then prepping for surgery, and I guess in your case as well, where you're then told it may potentially be malrotation and not Hirschsprung's. It then, yeah, everything can, I guess, feel like a complete whirlwind.
Yeah, and that's why when we got told it wasn't that. That's the point for me. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Is this real?
Yeah. But was it then helpful to, even though it wasn't malrotation, it was Hirschsprung's, was it helpful in a way to have that diagnosis confirmed?
Yeah, I mean, it took him a few days to do the biopsy, and in that time we was just stuck in limbo. But I did just want a diagnosis. So once we got it, it was like a relief. Like, okay, we know what we're working with. Because if not, they're like, if it comes back and it's not, we really don't know what it is. Like,
Yeah.
and that's what I was worried about. Like, are we going to be here forever? I felt like at that time I was never going to get out of the hospital.
Yeah, I can totally understand how that feels at that time. When you have, as like I said, an unknown condition, then you're thinking, what's going on? But at least having that diagnosis, I guess then you can have a path to go, okay, right, then we could have this option or that option, or we can then have a stoma fitted and reversal or whatever it might be. I guess it then becomes a lot easier to see a bit more light at the end of the tunnel, I guess.
Definitely. That diagnosis, that was a big turning point, just because we knew then what we was kind of dealing with and how we'd best manage that going forward.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned as well when you went back into NICU and you saw a lot of the sort of NG tubes and this, that, the other. I've known from, well, my own personal circumstance and from other people I've spoken to that when the nurse then gives you the baby to hold, was it almost like carrying a Fabergé egg? Or was it just kind of like, right, what am I going to do with this baby?
Yeah, that's it. And that's why we didn't dare hold him for a few days. Of like, oh. But yeah, definitely. It's just strange how the NGs came just a normal part. Like, it was weird to see him without one. Like, when he pulled it out, I was like, oh, that's his face. I've not seen his face properly because he's had an NG since he was like less than 24 hours old. They also got, my daughter was obsessed with babies at the time. They got a little NG and put it on her little baby. So it was actually like, I guess she was like, why has he got that? So it was like normal. And she could see all these other babies with them in as well. So that was a really nice touch from the hospital, just to kind of make it a bit more normal for her as well.
Yeah. Oh no, that's really good because I guess it can be, it can be different, can't it? I guess it can be very different when you're expecting one thing and, something else happens. It can be very different. So to have that sort of normalizing, I guess might be the right word, normalizing NG tubes. Yeah, I think that's a really nice touch. That's fantastic.
Was.
No, that's really good. So you said you had three surgeries. Your son's had
Yeah.
three surgeries. When was the final surgery?
He was 9 months old, so it was 2 years ago.
Wow. And then since then, obviously you've had a few hospital stays for dehydration and this, that, the other.
Yeah, I think he's had one hospital stay, and that was over a year ago now. Because I remember getting to the year point, like, we've not been in for a year, like, this is massive. Well, I was on first name basis, I knew all the nurses on the ward, like, I knew them all, and that's it. Like, it's like, I'm sick of seeing you now, to be honest. Like, you're lovely, but I'm really sick of coming here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been over a year since he was admitted for anything dehydration. Yeah, it's been
That's
great.
fantastic. And you said obviously he's going to nursery now. He's living a would you say a kind of like fairly normal life?
So he was toilet trained at 2.5 as well, which was a very big worry of mine and my husband's, especially with how often he goes as well. We did have to increase his loperamide medication when he started toilet training, because he just go for a poo. Like, if with one lot of medication a day, it was like 7 or 8 times a day, but it was all very loose. Now it's about three or four, a bit more manageable. But just him being toilet trained for us was a massive step.
Yeah. No, that's really, really good. Because again, it's kind of goes with the territory, doesn't it? With Hirschsprungs, you then kind of think, and I guess it's another point that you kind of might go through parents' minds at that stage as well, where you're thinking, are they going to go to nursery? Are they going to do this? Are they going to do that? And then are they going to be toilet trained? Are they going to be potty trained? All of that stuff then, I guess, comes sort of slightly secondary to that, And then you think, right, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? But from what you've told me, it all seems to be going kind of, really well, which is great. And which is, another part that I want on this podcast is having those kind of, I guess you call them success stories, I guess, that where people have obviously gone through a difficult time, because you can't not do with Hirschsprungs. It's going to, there are certain things that we all go through. But sort of coming out of the other end of that, with the occasional dehydration or the occasional issue here and there, is really, really good to see. No, that's absolutely fantastic.
It's honestly, it's going back to when you were born, I wouldn't have thought we would be it would be like this. I
No.
mean, when he has a cold, we really know about it because his tummy would really play up before. So he'll have like a whole day loose on that, right? He's got a cold coming, and then he'll have a cold, and his tummy's really affected when he has a cold. But I mean, I can manage that. That's fine. If that's all I've got to deal with, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I think that's another interesting point you make as well. When we have other illnesses on top, sometimes, certainly with Hirschsprung's people, you can, and I'd probably call it mother's instinct, where you can just kind of, you can just tell that either something's about to happen or that something has just happened, where, they're going to get a cold or some other, another cough or whatever it might be. Would you sort of agree with that as well?
Definitely. And we got to a point with nursery that his stools would be so loose because he was getting the cold, because it affects his tummy first, that they'd ring up to send him home. So his consultant actually wrote him a letter to say, this is going to happen. He's not got a tummy bug. He's got very frequent loose stools. And when he's got a cold, the first thing that's going to be affected is his bowel. So they are a bit more understanding now. They've got that letter from the consultant as well, which makes it easier for us. I mean, if he's poorly, I won't be sending him, but if he's just got a cold and he's absolutely fine, like I don't want him to be at home because he's fine. It's just he's got he's just a bit more frequent at the toilet. That's because his tummy's upset because of it hasn't he's not like everybody else. He's only got half his large bowel, so he's not going to be able to manage like others.
That is the thing. I think, again, it can be the similar with Hirschsprungs as well, because there's no, okay, apart from possibly a stoma, there's not usually many signs that you can see just by looking at a person and saying, well, they have Hirschsprungs. So it might, so sometimes it's, you can look at us and say, well, that person looks perfectly fine or is perfectly fine. That, if you were to line 10 people up and say, spot the one who has Hirschsprungs, you couldn't. So it's really, sometimes I think, not that we forget we have Hirschsprungs, but it might be sometimes that we kind of think, oh, actually, I'm not feeling well, and it maybe is exacerbated by the fact that, some of us are missing portions of our colon, some of us are missing half of it, some are missing all of it, and it's, I think, yeah, but that's really good, because then that kind of awareness of going, okay, something might not be 100%, and it may be linked to the Hirschsprungs, I guess, is a really good way, rather than just thinking, oh, something else is wrong, I guess.
Definitely. It's definitely helped.
But it's, no, I think that's really, really good. And then I guess kind of, so towards the future, I know we've talked a little bit about how he's kind of getting on now, and that you haven't been to hospital for a year, which is great news. So fingers crossed that continues. But as you said, he's kind of coming up around three now. In terms of his future, obviously staying away from hospitals and everything would be marvelous. But what else do you want to see, I guess, for him?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. station that makes you feel good.
I guess just that he doesn't feel different to any of his friends. That he doesn't question why something would be different. And if I can make that as normal as possible for him, then I will. He doesn't question, he's too young to question anything now, but I don't want him to feel isolated or excluded from anything because of the Hirschsprungs. And I do worry that in the future, because I do really monitor his diet, because I do find some food to really make, like, they just go straight through him. Like anything really like artificial sweeteners, anything like that, doesn't agree with his tummy. And so I'm just conscious in the future, if his friends are having sweets and I'm like, no, you're not having sweets, it's not because I want to be, it's because it'll upset his tummy. And I think that's going to be a challenge in the future with the diet situation and him feeling left out. And that is a bit of a worry for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think diet's a really interesting one, actually, because again, it's one of those where everybody reacts a bit differently. I think like normal stomachs, normal people.
Yeah.
but I think everybody kind of reacts differently. And from, again, but I'm not a doctor, it's not medical advice, but what I've seen with people, trial and error, and they kind of go, okay, well, this has worked today and this hasn't worked today. And I think, again, you see sometimes on these Facebook groups and people going, well, don't ever have this or don't ever have that. And you think, well, not necessarily, because that might work for my child.
Yeah.
But alternatively, this might not work for my child. Yeah. So it's, yeah, that kind of, I guess it's that trial and error, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I know he cannot have Weetabix. That is a no-go. Like, he cannot have that. It's too high in fibre for him. So it was funny, actually. Yesterday we were at the shop and he saw some Weetabix. I want some Weetabix. Oh, no. Unfortunately, you can't have that. Because he used to have it in nursery and we had to tell the nursery. I think they made a comment one time. It's like, oh, we can tell you he's had Weetabix today and he's having a nap. It's like, please don't give him Weetabix. It's like, that's fine. There's just certain foods that might be fine for others, but yeah, he definitely cannot have. Any like squash or fruit juice, that is a no-go as well. Finding an alternative of that is proven pretty difficult. I keep trying different ones. Even just fruit though, like strawberries or raspberries, that can go straight through them as well. But he really likes it. Apples, I have to make sure all the peels off, all the skin's off. I have to peel it all for him. But he really likes fruit. I don't want to discourage him from having fruit.
Yeah.
But really, you know, he'd be best on some ultra-processed bread with, like, the most ultra-processed butter, the most beige diet possible, because it's the most processed. But I don't really want him having a diet like that. So he's just weighing that up, like, it's stopped him going to the toilet so much, but also it's not very healthy.
Yeah, that's a really difficult dilemma, isn't it? Because, you know, for a lot of parents, it's kind of, well, I want our child to eat more vegetables, and if they like fruit, brilliant, fantastic. But then you almost kind of have to pull back as well, and that's tough.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to do, you know, 100% the right thing, but also because of what he has, it's kind of, yeah, I see what you mean about actually better doing this sort of ultra processed this, that, the other. Yeah,
that would but be it's, so bro, there's no fibre in it. There's nothing no. too there's no nutrients in it. But I don't want him having that.
No, so, but then for other Hirschsprungs people, people I've talked to as well, they need to increase the fibre.
Yeah.
So then, because I was told that when I was younger, that I needed to increase my fibre. But then, so I guess it depends on what Hirschsprungs you have. And
yeah.
I don't know the ins and the outs of everything, but God, that's tough.
Yeah. It just shows though, isn't it? Like, even his consultant when he first did the surgery, oh, I think he'll be constipated, etc. But he's the opposite. Like, even I remember him saying he really can't, predict for Luca, because it's like everything I've told you is going to happen hasn't happened, because everybody is so niche. They just can't predict how the body's going to react to something.
Yeah, that's the really tough thing with Hirschsprungs. And hopefully, with a lot of the research that's going on in Canada, America, and over here, hopefully, you know, maybe by the time Luca's a teenager, we'll know a little bit more, you know, maybe we might have found a cure, who knows?
Yeah.
But hopefully we will know a lot more about what sort of path to take, and you know what works here and what works there. But at the moment, it's still everything that I think I know, I now know somebody who is completely the opposite.
Yeah.
So it's everybody who messages me and says, or comments or whatever, and says, oh well, you can't do this, or you have to do that. I'll go, well, I found this person and they do the opposite.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay. So it is a tough one. It's definitely a tough one.
Yeah. I know, because I know some of my friends, when they found, I told them about his condition, first thing you see online is, oh, they might be constipated. So when I say, oh, he's not, they're like, oh, but it says online. I said, oh, yeah, but that's not for everyone.
Yeah.
That's probably like some cases, but so just getting enough of people's understanding about it as well.
I think so. I think that's the thing. If anybody takes anything away from this episode, it is just that everybody is different. And it's not to just trust the first thing you see on Google and go, well, that's what Hirschsprung's is, you know, so everyone's like that. It's just not the case, is it?
No, and I think as well, even I don't think if I kept going on that Facebook group seeing these negative messages, I'd even tried toilet training him at 2.5, because I'd have thought there's no way he'll be ready. But I did only did it straight away, and I think that's a really, I feel like hopefully somebody will take that from this, because don't not try something because it's not worked for somebody else. I mean, we were really happy, obviously, his toilet training, but I think at the start I thought, oh no, I won't be able to try that till he's at least 3.5, 4 years old. But yeah, if I'd listened to other people, I wouldn't have tried it. So
no, very, very, very true. And again, trusting your instincts on that as well, I think is huge. But no, but thank you so, so much for coming on. It's been excellent to hear just how Luke is getting on, and that he's doing really, really well, obviously after having an initial issues with Hirschsprungs. But no, thank you so much. And I wish, obviously, Luca yourself and the whole rest of the family all the very, very best for the future.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.